Hi, this is Jason Figgis, director of the award-winning Don't You Recognize Me. Check out my new film, Torment, releasing in the US in March. You're listening to Grindhouse Messiah.
House Messiah. We're here with a special guest this week, but before we get to her, let me just quick introduce my co-host. Hey, Blaine, what you up to?
What's going on, man? Oh, enjoying it. My neighborhood is half on fire right now, and we're flooded with a bunch of news reporters, so that's exciting. Luckily, my house didn't burn down, but yeah, man, just living the good life, watching it all fucking burn.
Well, we're not burning, but we're at like almost 80 degrees up here in freaking Philadelphia in February. So, you know, I guess we're close. We're not quite there yet. But nonetheless, before we really kick things off, I want to just quick say thanks to our sponsor, Vinegar Syndrome, who's we've been diving into their January package and the February one we should be getting real soon and talking more about too. So on our next couple episodes, stay tuned for some reviews of those Blu-rays. And again, thanks, James and the crew over there at Vinegar Syndrome.
Yeah.
And without much further ado, I want to introduce our guest.
Hey.
Hi.
Hi.
So this is our guest, guys. Her name is Madeline. Madeline, why don't you tell everybody who you are?
Hi. I'm Madeline Kestner. I am one of the founders and programmers of the Philadelphia Unnamed Film Festival, which is in Philly in the fall. I'm that's me. Is that good?
Yes, Madeline, no, that's great. No, thank you so much for coming and joining us. We're continuing our Women in Horror Month, so we're really lucky to have you to come through. Beyond doing the programming, I mean, you also have a pretty nice resume of places you've written as well, right?
Yeah, I wrote for Fangoria for like a really long time. I was an editor at Diabolique for a while. Way back in the day, I wrote for Famous Monsters of Filmland. And then I've been on like numerous websites. I don't know. I feel like I'm like not the best at like self-promotion. I'm always kind of like quiet in the background, but I've been like working in this world for like over a decade now, I think. Yeah. Awesome. I love all this stuff. I love the movies, the horror movies.
You love the horror, the movies yeah, that this are scary?
Is, yeah, I like them scary movies. So this is the third year of the Philadelphia Unnamed Film Festival that we're going into. And also, there's another film festival that I've been working with. I've been in kind of like an advisor role for them called the Unnamed Footage Festival, which is all found footage horror. That we're doing that in San Francisco about a month from when we were recording right now. So it's March 24th and 25th. If you Google Unnamed Footage Festival, you'll find more details on that. Our lineup's like about to be announced and it is bonkers. I'm like so excited. I love found footage horror. I don't know if you guys are fans.
No, we are actually. We did a found footage episode that never aired because our software lost it. We had two of the stars from a movie called Alter, which came out this year.
Yeah, I know.
You know that movie? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So two of the gals, Stephanie Estes and Brittany Filardo, had been on our podcast. They're going to be back on soon. I haven't decided if we're going to try to re-record that episode or do something different, but they'll be on soon. Yes, and we covered a few films in that one, yeah.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say... With the unnamed footage festival, I mean, is it exclusively horror, or does it branch out into other genres as well?
It is not exclusively horror. We have a little bit of comedy in there. There's definitely some science fiction films, but everything is first person point of view. The rules we set were like camera has to be in world. So it either has to be like a fake documentary or like a cell phone video or something like that, where the camera is an actual character of the film.
Okay.
We set a bunch of like technical rules, and we're actually working on putting together a little like booklet that has articles about found footage horror and point of view, first person point of view cinema. That like if you buy a badge to the whole film festival, like you get a copy of the magazine. And hopefully we'll have, like, leftover of that so we can then, like, sell them because it's looking like it's going to be, like, a really cool little book. But, yeah, this is a project I'm working on in collaboration with a group called the Overlook Theater. They're in the Bay Area. They run a very cool website. The lineup is really awesome. So I'm hoping that, like, we'll send you guys stuff, and I hope I can inspire you to do more found footage coverage.
No, absolutely. I actually checked out a really good one the other day, called Hell House LLC, which...
Oh, yeah, I love that movie. We talked about screening it, but it's so available. It's already on Amazon Prime. So we're like, damn it, like, it just doesn't feel right. But that actually scared me.
Yeah, same here. Yeah, scared the shit out of me, sitting in an empty house watching it, because, God, you talk about a movie that would be easily slept on. It's like as generic of a title as possible. Mm-hmm. You know, like, the setup's like every low-budget found footage movie setup, and shit, they were so scary.
Yeah, I think they just had, one, they had the technical skill. Two, they understood how, like, the simplicity in a scare, in an effective scare, is, like, what they do the best, in my opinion. Because sometimes just, like, a head turn silently is scarier than like a bunch of noise and like a lot happening.
Right.
And I feel like that's where that movie succeeds, is it understands how to really make you upset. Yeah.
Right. It's not just someone just jumping and being really loud.
Which, yeah. Yeah.
But don't get me wrong. That has its place. Like I'm a sucker for it.
I'm not like an anti like pop scare person. I think everything has its place if like used correctly. And I also just think that, like, roller coaster style horror movies are fun as hell. So, yeah.
No, that's awesome. Well, tonight we're going to be actually highlighting a couple of films that you had picked out that you had programmed at last year's PUF. So what's the first film that we're going to be checking out tonight?
Graduated, and this may be the last chance all my friends get to be together. I didn't want to leave anyone out.
High school's over. Look at this place. It's It's gonna be a good weekend. We could play a game.
No video game.
For real.
We could play Dead Body.
Lame.
No, come on. It sounds like fun.
One of us is secretly the killer, and after I count to three and hit the lights, we all hide. Once a minute passes, the murderer sneaks around, and if he or she pinches you, you're out.
If you find the victim, you call out, "Dead body!" And then we all regroup and argue about who we think the killer is. Get it?
One, two, three!
You guys, I think I saw a guy out there! You have to come see this!
I saw her go downstairs with Mariko.
Jesus, you guys are getting way too into this game! I have a real problem!
That's what I'm talking about. Beats PlayStation, huh?
I think we're going to talk about Dead Body, right?
That's right. And that's actually from Puff 1, right?
Yeah, Dead Body we showed in Puff 1, which was in 2016 when we had it in this like weird upstairs banquet hall in a Mexican restaurant that used to be a mob hideout. And we like built a screen that was like all the way from the floor to the ceiling because the ceilings were too low. And like everybody sat in like a weird formation in chairs and they were just like running all this beer up to us. And it was the craziest, best thing. And so for our first year, we had 6 features and 2 were directed by women, which was something I was so excited about, especially because we didn't do it on purpose. Like when I finally picked out the 6 movies I wanted to show, I'm like, oh damn, this is like 1/3 of our directors are female, which is hard. It's actually hard to find enough movies by women directors. So yeah, one of those 2 movies from Puff Year One was a film called Dead Body, which I had seen at another festival and I fell in love with. Yeah.
Awesome. And then the second film I played in Puff 2, and we'll get more into that one, but that one was Imitation Girl, right?
Yes. Yeah. Imitation Girl, we showed at the last one in 2017, directed by a woman named Natasha Carmani, who came out and did a Q&A with us. Imitation Girl, I feel, is like a very like feminine film, while Dead Body is just like a raucous slasher in the woods, kind of like, you know, who's the killer mystery. Yeah. And oh, yeah. The director of Dead Body is a woman named her name is Bobbin Ramsey is her last name. And it's the only thing she's ever directed. She's from the theater world. She's from Seattle. I only talked to like the producers through like the whole experience of bringing it out. So I'm disappointed I've never gotten to have a conversation with her because I think she's so talented.
Yeah, I like both of the movies a lot. I wouldn't. Obviously, if anyone's listening to this expecting specifically like straight horror, Dead Body is. Imitation Girl is certainly not.
Yes.
So, in fact, there's very little horror to Dead Imitation Girl, except for maybe some of the concepts are pretty creepy.
Yeah.
But overall, that's more of like a contemplative sci-fi film. But we'll get into that one next. Let's start with Dead Body. So Blaine, why don't you kick us off with a little plot summary of Dead Body?
Yeah, basically 9 high school kids end up going out into the woods after graduating from high school. They're stuck out in the wilderness. They end up kind of fighting and arguing, and then they kind of settle eventually after drinks to play this game called Dead Body, which is essentially kind of a hide and seek with a catch kind of game. And all of a sudden
they call it an old parlor game.
As they keep playing, people end up actually dying. Then it turns into kind of a fun little 10 little Indians kind of murder mystery that I ended up having a blast with. What about you, Justin?
I think it's a whole lot of fun. So, I'll get more into that. But what drew you to this film? You said you saw this at another festival first.
Yeah, actually, I'm pretty sure I saw it at Texas Frightmare.
Okay.
And I was there like promoting Fangoria stuff at the time. And they have like a mini film festival that goes on during the convention. And my friend was like, my friend Ken Hanley, who's also like worked on Puff a little bit and is from Fango, or from the old Fango, whatever, you get it. You know what I'm talking about. He goes, "Yo, go watch Dead Body. It is so up your alley." And I'm like, all right, sold. So I did, and he was 100% correct. I love games in movies, especially games that if you lose the game, you die. And I think it's like such a clever and simple premise that they're playing a hide and seek type game where everyone has to hide and one person is supposed to, you know, tap you and that makes you dead. But instead, they're actually dying. Yeah, and I love the whodunit aspect. I love that it's like a cabin in the woods. I love how gory it is. It's like for a low budget movie. They managed to like incorporate a lot of really neat little kills and like fun effects. It's such a party film. That was like the big sell for me. I'm like, this is our Saturday night movie. We're gonna get drunk and we're gonna party and watch Dead Body and it's gonna rule. So yeah, that's where it's at.
Yeah, no,
it's totally fair.
And that was kind of the vibe I got, because at first when it first started, I was like, oh my god, like I don't know, I'm not a huge slasher fan. Like it's just one of those things that's never been like my thing. But mm-hmm. like as it went, and as soon as they started the game, it was. Like you said, it turned into such a fun party movie to where, like, I was so excited at each kind of, like, you know, little turn and kill, because I was expecting, as it went, I was like, okay, this isn't going to be – I had to kind of adjust myself. I'm like, okay, this isn't going to be, like, a super violent movie. It's going to be a lot of off-screen kills. And then, you know, not to spoil anything, but when they start sawing the head off, I got so fucking excited because I just wasn't expecting that because it just starts out – you know, as kind of that typical, like, oh, we're in the woods, we just graduated, we're all like 28 and like partying. But yeah, it's I was so surprised at how much fun I had and how much I got sucked into it. Like for me, like towards like the very end, after we found out the killer, it slowed down a little bit, but overall, I mean, I had such a good time with it, and I was definitely shocked because this just, it's not my kind of movie usually.
Yeah, I mean, slashers, they have their place, and I love them, but, like, I love the pick-em-off. Like, that's my favorite part, where you know one by one these people are going to die, and it's the excitement of, like, how is it going to happen? What are they going to use? What's it going to look like? Who's next? Yeah, I think Dead Body does that really well.
It had a nice little mystery element to it as well. I mean, like, yeah. I like the way, like you were saying, Blaine, it's kind of the mystery element of where you're along for the ride trying to guess who it is and stuff. And not every slasher is that. I like those kind of slashers where you have a little bit of that traditional, you know, clue almost element.
I think that's how we pitched it. I think we were like Clue meets Friday the 13th.
That's a pretty good description.
Yeah. And I think that pitch like went really well because it was our best attended screening of year one. We had that weird room packed with people and they were all really into it.
Oh, it was like back in the days when that room was a speakeasy, you know?
Yeah.
Out.
That's kind of what it felt like.
That's awesome. Because that's the other part I didn't bring up. I loved how they like divvied out all the weapons so you could just watch every scene just hoping to get, you know, a good clue of like who it was, and all the red herrings from the beginning were, I mean, God, that's why I ended up in my brain, I kept going back to like 10 little Indians because it kept feeling like every time the lights went out, someone else was gone.
Yeah. I'm not going to lie. I don't know what 10 little Indians is except for the little kid in song. So I'm a little lost at that reference.
It's Agatha Christie book.
Oh, I'm dumb. Yes, I do know. All right, go on.
But yeah, so like every time someone disappeared, I had such a blast just trying to figure it out. And like, I'm not gonna ruin anything, but I guessed it, but then I second guessed it until the very end, which I loved, because I think it should be one of those movies where you should be able to figure out who's doing it, but it should be smart enough to kind of distract you and kind of still make you not really sure of that, because it still has to be like a level of plausibility. And I think that that's something that they really actually took in consideration with the script, is making the killer plausible, but giving enough red herrings that things, you know, just stayed moving, because once you already know, it kind of does kill it, at least for me. But yeah, I think it was, they really handled that like way better than any other modern slashers that come to mind.
Yeah, and also I think one of the reasons that that aspect of it is so successful, and also it's a low budget movie, it's a lot of talking, is the theater background. That like the director came from the theater world, so she knows how to like stand six people in one spot and have them deliver their lines in such a way that is really engaging, and that also works really well for like the twists and turns, that so much of it is coming from the dialogue and weird little visual cues, and stuff like that. So like if you are also into movies that have more of a theatrical feel, Dead Body has that too, which I love. I love movies that are like cinematic theater.
Right. Definitely.
And that is a good way to describe it, because it does have that theatrical side. But also, I mean, I'm surprised that this is all that she's done, because when it does go into those cinematic parts, you know, the chasing in the woods and everything, it's shot really well. And it never looks cheap throughout the whole thing, which is such, I mean, like, you know, with programming, you see all those, you know, submissions that come in, and it's just, it's hard to get past some stuff that just looks like, it looks like a first time trying something. And I don't know, I'm just really impressed when I see someone be able to frame shots to do good outside lighting at night. I don't know. Mm-hmm. It's a really fun way to spend, you know, either a Saturday night or even a bored Sunday morning, you know, just kind of, you know, enjoying the flick.
Yeah. I mean, I think they made this in like end of 2014, maybe 2015.
Yeah, because I think there's like 8 release dates in IMDb, like all these movies. You know,
like,
this is a 2014, no a 2015, no a 2016, no a 2017 film. Like, mm-hmm.
I think it finally was released to like the public in 2017.
Straight to VOD, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's a small movie. Yeah, like, so it is sort of like a streaming audiences type movie. Right. Although it would have been like fun as hell to see Dead Body in like a mainstream multiplex or something. But they played a lot of festivals. They had like a year long festival tour, and I think we were towards the end of it. So I don't know. It's also, like you said, it looks really good, and it does feel like a low budget film, which I think a lot of people, when they know something is low budget, they automatically turn off. And if you can just like stay with it for a few minutes, you see how competent it is, you know? But like going to film festivals, like little ones, like underground ones, sometimes it's the only way to see stuff like this. That's awesome. Right. Until it does get like put out on VOD.
Well, and anyone listening can check it out right now on Amazon Prime. So
yeah, it's available. Yeah, it got distribution, and now it's everywhere, and everyone can watch it and have a cool party at home with themselves.
Right, and obviously, I mean, I don't mean to say going straight to VOD is disparaging at all, because I think that's actually a really good business model in 2018. You know, I mean, you know, obviously, you know, you could talk about huge movies that do that now. You know, your Cloverfield Paradox, you know, your other things that go straight to streaming services. So there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
I just bring it up to say, you know, when it finally hit the public, that's how it hit. And so folks can go check it out on Amazon Prime. If they're not Prime members, it's on all the other major VOD to purchase or rent. So it's pretty easily accessible now.
Yeah. I don't know. It's like a cool time for low budget in my opinion, because there's a lot of movies being made, and the distribution method has changed so much. And there's also a ton of little film festivals springing up. And I think the reason is because huge film festivals and theaters don't show this kind of, you know, these kinds of movies, and people want to watch them. So you can almost now put together a theatrical tour just via genre fests, and like get your film shown in theaters everywhere, but just like through like underground film festivals.
On top of that, there's like repertory theaters in every major city now too. So you could go to all the film festivals and throw in a couple rep theaters, and you literally could play every major city.
Yeah, which is really cool. I want to track movies that are like doing that. Like I know Dead Body played a bunch of places. We showed a movie called Ruin Me. Which I know, Justin, you and I have talked about a lot, because that movie is one that you should talk about.
Right,
it also has a little bit of that same sort of, like, we're playing a game aspect to it. So like Rude Me and Dead Body kind of go hand in hand. We were like, when we were putting the 2017 program together, we were like, oh, this is like the Dead Body of this year.
I can see it appealing to a lot of the same people, although I will say that as much as I really like Dead Body, Dead Body doesn't necessarily have a lot of the depth of themes that I feel like Ruin Me does.
Yeah, I think there's some stuff about, because they're all high schoolers who are about to go to college, so there is some sort of like classism discussions of you know, going to different colleges and how it affects your life and all that, but it's pretty light. It's pretty, like, it's sort of just, like, for fun.
While I feel like it's mostly interested in being fun.
But I was thinking about Rumi because their festival tour was incredible. They've played so many film festivals, and I kind of want to, like, take a map and, like, track it and like, put together, like, a path where it's like, hey, are you a small horror film? Do you want to, like, tour your movie? Submit to all these film festivals and you can basically build a theatrical release for yourself.
Or you can build the map and not tell all the small films, and then you can just become a publicist and make the money by booking them for them. I mean, wait, what?
Shit, did we just come up with, like, an incredible business idea and, like, set it publicly?
And just gave it away to everyone. I might have to edit that out. No, but...
Actually, do edit it out. Let's talk later.
Like, why are we not doing that? Like, fuck this podcast. We got a better idea.
Awesome. All right. So obviously, all three of us we're big fans of Dead Body, and a film that neither of us had seen until this past week in preparing for the podcast. So thank you for recommending that one. We both really enjoyed it. So.
Oh, that's awesome. I didn't realize that that it was new to you guys. That's so cool. I'm glad that people are still discovering it.
Right. Yeah, because to me, that's one of the great things about, especially when it comes to, you know, these things like the film festivals, there are so many horror films that come through these days. There really is a need these days for someone to, you know, kind of pick out the best of the bunch a lot of times. And like a movie that's called Dead Body, it's not exactly jumping out at you. You know what I mean? So it's great, you know, with you know, festivals like this to, you know, draw attention to these movies so you can kind of tell the difference, because even the best of some of these movies still have, like, you know, those kind of names. Ungoogleable, you know.
Oh yeah, you just look up Dead Body, you're screwed.
Yeah, you get basically a warning from Google saying these results are blocked. They are adult.
Yeah, right.
And I'm like, no, don't show me corpses. Please don't show me corpses.
Right. Don't click images after you search it. Don't just click the word images.
Please don't.
اسمی نداره؟
نه، فکر نمی کنم.
خیلی عجیبه.
Do you remember why you got into this? Because it was easy. Because of the money. I can't remember why I got into it. Instead of anything else. Looking for you, for your face, before you got it.
So our next film, obviously different tonally, much different tonally, much different type of film, Imitation Girl. And I'm gonna turn it to Blaine again for a little synopsis, because he's so good at reading IMDb.
I know, man. I love IMDb. I used to try to make them up, but now I can just read them. A mysterious young woman materializes in the middle of the Southwest desert, where each step teaches her about her new world and her new body. As she assumes a new life, she discovers she has a twin with whom she shares more than just an outward appearance. Yes. Imitation Girl, this is another movie that was my first time watching. I had gotten a chance to watch it a few times, but just never made it around to it. It had super fucking cool, cover art, all the stuff that I did want to see. I just one of those times where you just kept watching. I kept watching something, instead. But I was glad to finally check it out. And I mean, Madeline, I mean, what kind of drew you to showing this film and kind of picking it as one of our topics tonight?
So, Imitation Girl. I knew about it because they shot it in Brooklyn, and they actually had like an effects day, and I got to like stop by the set. So like I knew that it was like an effects heavy movie. Although it's really kind of like isolated into a few scenes, it really is an emotional journey. Effects, yeah,
I feel like are just in a few scenes. Yeah.
Yeah, but so I knew that it had effects in it, and so I wanted to see it, and it was premiering at a film festival called CineQuest in San Jose, which actually starts next week. But so it was a year ago at CineQuest, and I'm like, oh man, they're premiering Imitation Girl. I gotta go. So I went to the world premiere of it. And I was completely blown away, especially seeing it in a theater. The visuals in this film are incredible. And afterwards, I found the producers, and I'm like, hey, I love this movie. And they're like, thanks. I'm like, what's your like schedule with it? And they're like, we don't know. We're just trying to get into film festivals. We haven't gotten into very many, and we think it's because the movie's a little too weird. And like the themes of it are something that belong at like a very serious festival, mm-hmm. but they aren't reacting to us because we're too like small, we're too low budget. But genre festivals have been sort of embracing us, and I'm like, that's amazing. I run a genre festival. I want to show this. So they submitted it to us.
They were like, yay!
Yeah, and the rest of the programmers watched it, and everybody gave it a thumbs up. Like, we were all like, this is the beautiful, fascinating, arty thing that we've been looking for. Because year one of Puff, we did 6 films. Year two, we did 10. And part of the reason we wanted to expand is so we could show stuff that was a little more out of the box. And Imitation Girl is exactly that. So I love low budget science fiction so much because it is one of the hardest things to do successfully, in my opinion. Because a lot of sci-fi really relies on these massive set pieces, special mm-hmm. effects, like creating other worlds through just like lots and lots and lots of money, usually. So when you have a low budget science fiction film, it has to survive on its ideas. Because that's, you know, most of what it's giving the audience is concepts. And Imitation Girl just gets like an A+. The ideas in this movie are so beautiful and beautifully executed. It's basically an alien crash lands on Earth, sees a picture of a woman, and assumes her body. And we then get to watch the life of the woman whose body she took, who's like, you know, just a young woman living in Brooklyn, who also happens to be a porn star, and
but hates her life as a porn star.
Yeah, she's
or is indifferent. Yeah. Maybe not hates, but she's becoming much more disenfranchised.
It's interesting because I think, like at face value, you could be like, is this an anti-porn film? But it's not. I don't think it says anything negative about porn at all. I think it's mostly just about being displeaced with your like career path.
Your place in life. Yeah.
That like maybe you thought you were gonna do something else, and now you're looking at your life and you're like, how did I get here? I feel confused and I feel like displaced. And then watching this alien who has crash landed on Earth and now looks like this beautiful woman and is wandering around and experiencing everything for the first time. And it's just like living this life full of possibility.
Hmm.
Yeah. And also both women are played by Lauren Ashley Carter, who is a brilliant actress. Her face.
She's like a genre superstar, man.
Yeah, definitely. Her eyes are so expressive. Like I could just like stare at her and it tells a story. It's wonderful.
I can't disagree there. I can't disagree. And Blaine and I being, you know, being guys, we're talking earlier about the picture, you know, the her and her on the bed and kind of how we'd love to be sitting in the middle.
God, you're creeps.
So, I know. We really are. We are. I mean, I'm married, so, you know, it's just a daydream. But, you know, that's it.
Oh, yeah. No, Lauren Ashley Carter does definitely make me feel like a creep. And it's funny you mentioned her eyes because I ended up watching this movie with my mother actually last night. And she kept just saying, "Oh my God, this girl's eyes. She's like a human deer. Like she's got these giant, big brown eyes." But yeah, no, I mean, she is so tremendous in the movie because all cards on the table. Like, this is a movie that I liked it. It didn't really nail at least it didn't. I want to word this in the right way because I like the movie. I enjoyed the ride. I liked kind of because I do enjoy like that kind of meandering film where it lets a lot of things breathe. For me, it didn't really resonate towards the end, but I still did really enjoy kind of the trip. And I think most of that for me was just watching Lauren Ashley Carter just, you know, play these two, you know, tremendously different roles. You know, I mean, not even almost not even looking like herself in either of those characters. Because, I mean, to me, like as her like real world, you know, porno star actress, she almost looked like a less butch version of Kristen Stewart.
Yeah,
I enjoyed it, but like it kept reminding me. I'm not sure if either of you have seen from probably about three or four years ago, a film called The Interior. It's called The Interior by I think Trevor Egeris made it. It was a really similar film in a lot of ways, but I don't know, for some reason that one kind of it resonated with me more. I think a lot of Imitation Girl, I think it's what you're bringing to it that you end up kind of getting out in the end. And I don't know if I was just on board enough, but I mean, I enjoyed the trip. I thought it was such a gorgeous film. I mean, the scenes with the Iranian couple, brother and sister, were like truly like touching and really give a lot of humanity. So I'm torn somewhere in between because it's you know, it's something that I really enjoyed a lot of it, but as we made it to the climax of the film, it just I don't know it just didn't nail it for me, but I could see why it would work for someone else. I want to be very specific in saying that. I don't want to sound like I'm trashing the ending. It just didn't resonate.
Yeah, well, it's a very contemplative.
Right.
A lot of it is sort of just about watching how people live and like react to things and watching people think about their lives. So you're right. I think you walk into it and like you have to insert yourself, like your feelings about like, oh, now I'm thinking about my life and my place in life. And now I want that like naivete back of like being a young person and discovering things. And so it's got some longing in it. I found it very beautiful. And also very feminine. It's, you know, two women directed by a woman who also wrote it. She's a American Iranian filmmaker. She actually came out and did a Q&A at PUF, and I was expecting her to be like, just like this, you know, I don't know, very serious, very intelligent person. And she was super smart, but she was funny as hell. Like, like she showed up in like a leather jacket and she's like making jokes and like cracking me up and like swearing. And I'm like, I expected you to be, I don't know, just like quiet.
Well, the movie doesn't come across as made by somebody who's swearing and wearing a leather jacket.
Yeah.
You know, so you picture, I get that. I mean, you know, it's funny, calling it a sci-fi film feels like a misnomer, even though it is. You know, if I were to say, hey, you're a sci-fi fan, check this out, I'd be doing someone a disservice.
Yeah.
If I was telling somebody that, like, oh, you like a quiet, contemplative film about, you know, identity and self and and what it means to be human, that's what this is. You know what I mean? And so while it might not even be stylistically something I tend to vibe with, I did vibe with it mostly because I think I went into it expecting it to be what it was to a large extent just because of the reviews I've read.
Yeah.
So I think I was prepared. I think that if I was expecting a little bit something different, I don't know if I would have come out the same. But I think that speaks to Dwayne's point in that I do think it's a film that very much has to do with what you bring in as much as what it brings to you. Because I think it's very much asking the idea of what is self, what is identity.
Yeah.
What who are you and who am I and what does that mean in this world? And I think so if what you're bringing to it matters just as much, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, because I feel like this is a film that I could end up revisiting in a couple of years and getting something completely different out of it, because I mean, because it's a mood piece. So if you are, you know, in a mood where you're not trying to think and say, you know, kind of get inside yourself while you're watching a movie. I think you end up kind of, I feel like I kind of cheated myself, maybe not being in that right, you know. Kind
like when you're watching it on date night with your mom?
Yes, when I'm when I'm doing my mom date night, watching the movie, you know, while we eat Weight Watchers, you know, blueberry scones. It's, I don't know, I wasn't really thinking about it in that way. But it's just something that I do want to give it probably, you know, probably 6 months or so and make my way back to it. Because it kind of drove me crazy all day because it is my kind of movie. It's like what I'm
it is your kind of movie, boy.
They even speak in Farsi for almost no reason. Like we had covered, you know, A Girl Walks Home Alone at Night last week and talked about this. And, you know, it's kind of
funny. I talked about how that bothered me because it's not even her first language and you freaking insisted on doing it. So.
But it's even those little flourishes that I think just give it like such a good humanity that I do want to make my way back to it and give it, you know, maybe one of those nights where I am just watching movies by myself and you know, drinking too much coffee and doing nothing else. I mean, I think it is going to be something that I think could be a completely different movie under different circumstances.
It's definitely a revisit kind of movie too. Like I'm definitely expecting to visit this multiple times in my life and coming out with it a little bit something different, like you're saying.
I've seen it three times now. The first time I saw it was the premiere at Cinequest, which was very much just like I was like blown away by it. So in that viewing, I was like overwhelmed, and also it's a short movie. It's like 80 minutes long, maybe. Like the first time I watched it, it felt much longer. It felt like I was in that space, and I wasn't bored, but it did feel like, I don't know, I was just kind of overwhelmed by how much it was the first time I saw
it. It is slower, it meanders in a good way, but yeah.
Right.
I mean, yeah.
It was beautiful. Like, I loved it. I didn't want it to end, but, like, I was shocked. I'm like, I've been sitting here for at least 100 minutes, and I'm like, wow, that was 80 minutes that I spent in that world. But, like, it's just so kind of, like, big for, of course, being mostly just, like, shots of New Mexico. Yeah, which I also love that, like, it starts off in Roswell. It's, like, great.
Yeah.
That is pretty great.
It's just so clever. And then the second time I saw it was actually at the film festival, at my film festival at PUFF. And that one, because I was, of course, distracted by everything going on at the film festival and my mind was racing, it was just, like, it was almost like a sedative that, like, every time I got to sit down and just, like, look at the screen, I'm like, wow, this is bringing down my heart rate. It's really calming and beautiful. So it was very visual the second time I saw it. And then the third time I saw it, when I didn't have to stress about anything, I'm like, I'm not booking movies. I'm not at my film festival. I'm watching it with some friends, like, in a garage on a projector screen. I was just so wrapped up in it. And that was when I think I got very into the emotional message. And I was thinking about my life the most. Yeah. So I think coming to it in a place where you can, like, kind of clear your mind and let yourself, like, think about the things that are happening and not be worried, it is the ideal way to watch it. Well,
right.
I feel like this has been, like, a kind of spiritual podcast for you. Do you guys normally
if you listen to our episode with Graham Skipper, we talk about faith and reason and stuff so much, so it is us.
Yeah.
In fact, listen to our episode with Stephen Biro, and I don't even know what to explain about that one.
Well, he's a trip. That dude is
so, like, he told his, so, you know, for those who haven't listened to that episode yet, we recommend it because he tells his entire conversion story on our episode.
Oh, that's awesome.
Oh, my God. It's insane.
Oh, yeah, I forgot. Isn't Messiah in the title of your podcast?
Yeah. Grindhouse Messiah is
so this is par for the course. Yeah.
We're two weird Christian guys who don't like anything that most Christian people like. So, you know. You know, that's just what we are. You know, I'm a pastor's kid, you know, and I'm all screwed up because of it probably. But, you know. Hey, Mom, if you're listening, I love you. But anyway.
I just like
my mom's the pastor. Yeah.
And I hate to be that guy because I know we're having fun. I was just curious if either of you have checked out her other film that came out last year called Shattered by any chance. Did either of you start with Ray Wise?
Yeah, no, I haven't had the chance.
Well, I want to see it. Now that you say it starts with Ray Wise, I want to see it.
Yeah. It's like a...
Speaking of weird spiritual stuff, because Ray Wise has done some really weird Christian movies, by the way.
Oh, lots of weird... Yeah, he does a lot of those weird faith-based films. I saw him a couple weeks ago at Days of the Dead, and that man looks like he's made out of wax.
Oh, is he?
He might be. There's a really good chance he is.
Honest to God, like on an elevator, I was just looking. I thought this guy can't go anywhere. I'm gonna keep staring at his face, and it like I've never seen skin look so waxy outside of a corpse.
Ew.
It was like this like
on today's Crying Out Messiah, we talk about wax figures, otherwise known as Ray Wise.
Yeah, I was thinking, oh my God, are people paying $40 to take a picture with this wax, like this wax statue of a human?
Oh, jeez.
Sorry.
Listen, you're ruining our chances of getting Ray Wise on the podcast, okay? So.
I mean, it would have been awesome if it was actually, like, one of those, like, Total Recall heads that, like, Arnold wears to try and get through customs or whatever.
Yeah, no,
what if it was, Blaine? What if he didn't meet the real Ray Wise?
And
what
it actually was totally a wax.
Arnold like... with a wax Ray Wise face.
Oh, no, when I was staring at him, I was waiting for it to, like, open and him, like, lift it off, and it was just, like, this little lady that was under there. Yeah, you know, he's so scary looking. Yeah. He is the scariest looking, he's like the scariest grandpa ever. It's like if you just coated
him. My whole life, I used to think he was a cool guy, and then, like, I finally, at, you know, 34 years old, watched Twin Peaks, and now I'm scared of him.
Doesn't he cry a lot in Twin Peaks?
He does, and he's kind of absurd, but he's also really scary when he's freaking doing bad things.
So, he's so intense, yeah.
Anyway, I'm used to, you know, I remember him as, like, you know, the good guy in Jeepers Creepers 2, you know? So.
Anyway, I think of him as the devil in Reaper.
I've never seen that.
Reaper was better than I expected. I kind of dig Reaper.
Wasn't that written by Kevin Smith or something?
I think he was, like, maybe a producer on it and, like, wrote some of the early episodes. But, yeah, which also, like, totally goes against me because I do not like Kevin Smith, generally. Except for Yoga Hosers. That's the best Kevin Smith movie.
Oh, well, Yoga Hosers is definitely not a bad film. I actually...
Wait, oh my God, I was so ready to get attacked.
No, okay.
I actually think it's not a bad one. I mean, like, so I'm born and raised in North Jersey. So, like, the Jersey Trilogy and Jersey Girl, you know, and then post that, you know, Clerks 2, I'm a fan of all of that.
Yeah.
You know, I grew up with that stuff. But on the other hand, I think... Tusk might be one of the worst things I've seen in my entire fucking life. I hate that movie so much.
There are 20 very, very good minutes in Tusk, which actually might be Kevin Smith's best work, and that makes the rest of that film even more offensive.
Is that early in the film?
Yeah, it's basically the intro to the movie is so good, and then it gets so insultingly bad. That
so basically,
like
once Johnny Depp comes into the movie, it's unwatchable.
Oh God! Don't even. I can't believe that he's in Yoga Hosers, and I. Wait. Can I tell you why I like Yoga Hosers?
Yes, please do.
For Women in Horror Month, every Kevin Smith movie is usually about Kevin Smith, and about his dude friends and like jokes he makes, and like it's always his world. Yoga Hosers is the first time he finally made a movie about someone else, and it's about his daughter. And I think it's so loving that he, like, did this film for his daughter and her friend. And, like, it really feels like it's their world and their weird thoughts that they collaborated on with him.
That's fair.
So, like, I was just so kind of charmed by it, and also I watched it on drugs.
It's probably the best way to watch it. I mean, I don't do drugs, but I feel like if I did, that would be the movie I'd want to watch.
Yeah. See, okay, I'm going to feel sound like a monster because, yeah, it's really nice. I love the story about it. They made it with his daughter. But like,
man, I like that we both just like put you in a box where now you have to say something nice about Yoga Hosers.
Okay, I'm gonna say something nice. I'm in the rare camp that I like. I like Kevin Smith. Like, I kind of like him just because I don't know. I like people that are passionate about shit, and he's at least passionate about himself, and that kind of sells me on it. But I remember I sat down with my son. I think he was 6 at the time. And we're watching Yoga Hosers, and
can I just pause and say you're watching Yoga Hosers with a 6-year-old? Okay, keep going.
Dude, single dad. This is what we do. But he turned to me and he said, "Daddy, this is the worst movie I've ever seen." And I want to point out that a 6-year-old who will watch almost anything said that this is the worst movie he's ever seen.
God, that rules.
I'll bet you Kevin Smith would absolutely love that in a review.
I could probably get it on the cover. I probably could have got it on the cover of the DVD release. But
yeah, no doubt. Yeah, like, that's awesome.
See, but I'm also like, I love Kevin Smith, but when I go back and I rewatch the movies that I loved growing up, I mean, I know I'm not, like, as, like, quote-unquote woke as I should be, but, like, those movies are super offensive. Like,
yeah. Oh, no, they are.
I'm like, holy shit, you're right. We were all misogynists in the
90s. Yeah, they're really... Kevin Smith, it's like the early stuff, the stuff that people say are like, you know, his great years. When I watch those films, I feel like I can't exist. Like, this is a world that that doesn't acknowledge intelligent women. That's like,
they just don't exist. Because, like, my favorite for years was Chasing Amy, which I still think has things that I like about it. Let's just say that. And a little bit of nostalgia attached to it. But I was like, holy shit, this is, like, why I, like, went to therapy in my 30s to stop being this, like, awful fucking misogynist garbage person.
Oh, yeah, that's the attitude of all his films.
Yeah, because I was like, because that, like, resonated with me.
That one's really bad. And, I mean, honestly, you know, I could probably make an argument for Shannon Doherty's character having some strong moments in Mallrats. However,
yeah, she tries.
Overall, she's probably the only person in those first three films that could be quote unquote a somewhat strong woman.
And she's only fetishized as a strong woman.
It's only supposed to be a strong woman to make you get horny for them. Yeah,
yeah, mm-hmm. It's like get horny for this like strong woman. Like it's
really exactly weird. That's fair.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's like
I don't disagree. And I will say this. I say I love those movies. I love those movies as in like the young me loves them. I have not revisited most of them in a while.
Yeah.
So I can't even claim that they hold up. I think Clerks 2 is amazingly fun, but that doesn't qualify as being part of that era. It's long after, and I watched that one a bunch. I mean, there's a lot of offensive stuff, but it's intentionally offensive, so it's a little different. The older stuff is offensive completely unintentionally, as you're discussing. It's actually what he believed. So, you know, I mean, I don't know how I'd feel about them all now. But nonetheless, I think obviously the films we talked about today are kind of on the other end of the spectrum in that, you know, they're made by women. They're obviously have strong female characters. Imitation Girl is like very feminine, as you've explained already, Madeline. So, you know, I mean, it's probably like polar opposite of Kevin Smith. So that's fair.
Yeah. You know? Well, it's also like interesting that we're about like the voice of men like and the voice of like women and like Dead Body is a female director and it doesn't matter at all, like, you know, mm-hmm. any gender could have made that movie.
It's a very genderless voice in the way it's told,
yeah, but like a great director and she does incredible work. But like when I booked it, I didn't even know who she was, and in fact her name was Bobbin and I didn't know her gender and I was just like whatever.
That could be a male name.
Then when I put the program together I'm like, oh man, we have it's another female director. We had two movies in year one. It was Egomaniac, which was directed by a woman named Kate Shenton. Yeah. This is a micro budget film, and
like a made on like $5 kind of film.
Oh yeah, and it has got such a strong voice and it's hilarious and very strange. I think that's also streaming online, so highly recommend you watch Egomaniac. Egomaniac is actually about a woman director trying to make a horror film, and how the entire world is against her. And it like goes over a lot of those ideas of like, oh, everybody thinks this movie would be better if a man did it. Oh, everybody will only give me money if I pose like sexy because they don't want to promote a woman they're not attracted to. And like, but it's super bitter and super funny and British. But then Imitation Girl, of course, is not a movie that talks about femininity per se, but feels very feminine in its worldview. And so, I don't know, I think it's cool, and it's hard to book enough female-directed films at a film festival, and it is, like, no fault of anyone's, the world not encouraging more girls to pick up a camera.
So, yeah. And that's what hopefully Women in Horror Month is part of, you know, this saying this is a genre world where, you know, women aren't nearly getting the love they should. They aren't necessarily getting the encouragement they should. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I mean, but compared to other years, I mean, this year, at least in the world of kind of you know, lower budget and underground films, I mean, there was, you know, outside of Imitation Girl, there's also a handful of really good stuff that came around. A couple movies that I really enjoy. I mean, Book of Birdie, which I kind of put in that same kind of like genre, but not really genre film, more like fantasy film that made the rounds this year, and hopefully will get released soon as well. Get My Gun, which was a fun exploitation movie that was female directed. So I mean, it is great. I mean, with this kind of awareness, because even if you're not concerned with the gender politics, you should just want more unique voices coming around.
Yeah, I mean, and it's, exactly. Different kinds of storytelling. Because honestly, I'm kind of bored of the same white dude story over and over again.
Exactly. Yeah. And I mean, like, I know here in Atlanta, we have our kind of, I guess, not to say sister in any sort of derogatory way, but our sister festival, Women in the Atlanta Women, the Atlanta Women in Horror Festival. I mean, they ended up bringing out a ton of great stuff last year, and I know that they've already got.
Oh, dude. Wait, is that, did they show, they showed Roomie, right?
Yeah, they showed Roomie.
And Buzzard Hollow Beef.
Yes, yeah, Vanessa and Lynn.
Rules.
Yeah.
I didn't know that you were affiliated with that one.
Oh, we're affiliated, like, we're all buddies.
Yeah, you know, okay, so, like, you're hanging out in Atlanta.
Yeah, we're hanging out in Atlanta. We all go to each other's stuff, and we've got some, we actually have some plans, hopefully, this year that are going to work out with the two festivals, so hopefully, do that, but just so many cool, unique voices coming out of it. And man, last year they were out there in this area called Peachtree City, which is not, you know, a downtown area. It's very suburban. This year they've already moved into a bigger venue. They've got a lot more already. We've been around for 13 years. They're in their year two, and they've got so much more coverage than we could ever
rules. Yeah.
But you know, wonderful people. Big shout out to Vanessa and Lynn. You guys are great. And, you know, we all love having you. So yeah, it's I really think that this is so good for just art in general, because like you said, I've seen so much low budget horror made by, you know, guys just like me, you know, middle-aged white white dudes.
Yeah, and I'm not, and I don't even want those people to stop making movies. Like, I just want everyone to make movies. Like, I just want there to be, like, more of a wealth of different voices that, like, we can choose from. And we should just be encouraging creative people to tell their stories. But I also think that, like, the fact that we've been having all these conversations and, like, actually paying attention to how many films did we book that, you know, had female voices in them, is encouraging more people to speak up. So like, we have to keep talking about this, because the more we talk about it, the more it will stop being a problem and start just being something we're celebrating.
Yeah. Cause eventually it's just going to, you know, and tell me if I'm wrong, because, you know, I mean, but just becoming inclusionary, that it's not needed to have, you know, to say, hey guys, at our festival this year, we've got, you know, over 10 female directors, you know, like, I don't have to, like, really try to, like, sell myself that we have. I'm like, I know we're all, like, white dudes who did this, but, like, don't worry. There's, like, we've got a bunch of lady films, you know, like, I'm hoping, you know, to be able to, that you know, that this are, especially in underground and low budget films, for that to just become the norm. There's nothing holding, because there's really nothing holding people back if you've got a camera and ideas. A lot of what can get into these festivals, that's all it really requires.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Definitely. So with respect to time, I want to kind of move into our final segment of the podcast. And what Blaine and I always do, and we invite you to as well, Madeline, is share kind of one recommendation that maybe is in some way related. We decided we were going to pick films that have played Puff, and they were going to be what our recommendations were going to be. So I actually have two, so I'm going to kick it off with one from one and one from Puff 1 and one from Puff 2. From Puff 1, my absolute favorite film of that year, and actually was in my top 10 films period of that year, is Karate Kill.
Hell yeah.
Oh, God. It's just an amazing modern exploitation film. I don't know what else to call it other than call it a pure exploitation film. It is got some nice gore in it. It's got amazing action in it, and it's got a really, like, ridiculous, like, plot line that just screams
influence from the like golden age of exploitation. So I just love that film.
Yeah, Karate Kill is fun as hell.
I mean, there's not something, I'm not going to come and say it's like deep or meaningful. It's just fun.
Oh yeah, that's like fun. Just an exploitation film. It's like, I mean, junky, I say in like a loving way, where like they wanted that aesthetic, like they wanted it to just be like a, oh my god, what the fuck like is going on? There's so much violence. Like he does, there's like a whole fight scene that happens in the back of a truck, and it's wild. And it's
an amazing scene, in fact. Mm-hmm. And then in Puff 2, we've already mentioned this one, and but one of the other films by a female director, Ruined Me, was probably my favorite film of Puff 2.
Yeah.
I got a chance to watch almost all the films in the festival that year. And I would say it's just a really great kind of meta-ish slasher thing about an immersive camp out haunt thing.
Yeah.
But it's amazing in how I wrote a review about it in which I really dove into two main things that I think it does well. It talks about both the way women are marginalized and not believed and treated a certain way, but also how addicts are, because she's both a woman, the main character, both a woman and an addict, and how they kind of like no one wants to believe her. They want to put her down. They want to make her think she's seeing things that aren't there. And yeah. Oh man, it's a pretty brilliant film. So yeah, those are my two recommendations for sure. And I know that obviously Madeline, as the programmer of the festival, loves both of them.
You're right, I do.
Yeah. Blaine, I think you had picked one too, right?
Yeah, actually, a film that I was lucky enough to actually review, and you can find that over at thefarsidedblog.com, my review for an Icelandic film called Rift, or Rokur. Yeah, I think it was my number 7 film of last year. An absolutely beautiful, bleak, you know, kind of love story about these two men who had a relationship. One of them gets a call in the middle of the night from his ex-boyfriend that he's gone out to this cabin, this remote cabin where they had spent time together. Ends up going out there, and strange things start happening. In a sense, he's basically haunted by this relationship. I thought it was incredibly touching. It was smart. It had enough intrigue to kind of, you know, justify its genre tag. But what I really kind of struck me was a few weeks ago when I saw Call Me By Your Name, I kept thinking, like, the Rift already kind of did this in this, like, sense of, like, normalizing queer characters in cinema. This wasn't in my opinion, when I was watching, I never thought of it as a gay film. It was mm-hmm. this very real, very human, you know, concept of kind of missing that relationship and kind of mourning that loss of, you know, maybe not a first love like Call Me By Your Name is covering, but you know, something that was a real feeling that you had for someone that life's just kind of moved on, and kind of what happens to that person in your memory. It was really, I thought it was incredibly smart. Yeah, and like I said, just a kind and an interesting film. I loved that this movie ended up playing at a lot of festivals. I wanted to play it so bad, but unfortunately it got a VOD release like 2 weeks before the festival, so I didn't make all the horror fans watch this, but I wanted to really bad. I'm not sure. I know, Madeline, you've seen it, but Justin, did you ever catch this one at any of the fests?
No, I have not gotten a chance to check it out yet. I mean, I'm definitely interested. I just haven't gotten there.
Yeah, it's beautiful. Two of the reasons I was in love with Rift, one, what you were saying about how it is a queer voice, and the story is about like two gay men, but it doesn't feel like a gay movie. It just feels like a love story. And like that's also why, you know, I want more voices, because we get this different like kind of love story that, you know, is told like about gay guys, but it doesn't feel like it's a movie made for.
It doesn't necessarily matter that they're gay guys.
It's just a beautiful love story.
Two people love. Period.
Yeah. And so like that, like I loved it for that. And I also think that Erlinger, the director, he is someone to watch. Like, I think he is such an interesting filmmaker, and like the way he works with visuals and like the way he works with his characters is incredible. So like, I'm so excited for his next film. But then the other thing I loved about it, which is just sort of when I watched it, when a memory is so intense that it almost feels like you can talk to it.
Yeah.
Like, your memories become ghosts because they're so real for you that you wind up like interacting with it and reliving it constantly, and it's just bouncing around in your head over and over again. I think the way that Rift expresses that idea is so powerful. Yeah, Rift like made me weep.
When I saw it, I was like, I was moved. I was like, oh my God, I love this movie. Because I had, you know, reached out to, you know, other guys that I was working with, and they were like, it was fine. I was like, what do you mean? Like, I was so, it was like the first time for a while that I had been so invested in something that I was like offended that someone else wasn't like as excited about it as I was. And and also, I don't want to leave out the fact that, holy shit, it is, that where they shoot at is absolutely beautiful too. Like, just all the nature shots and scenes of these huge glaciers, man, it's, I mean, I could probably watch most movies shot in Iceland as long as I got to like see those nature shots, because it played such a role in it. I think it's incredibly unique, and I'm hoping it gets, because I've been outside of festivals, I haven't really heard much about it, which is seems strange to me. I know that they kind of got sucked into, I guess their distribution is through an exclusively queer cinema distribution company, so I don't know.
Oh no, it's Breaking Glass.
I thought Breaking Glass. Don't they put out every like quote unquote gay movie?
Yeah, they do. Breaking Glass is based out of Philly. They're a partner with the film festival. Okay. Breaking Glass put out Rift and also Assholes. Which, like, they picked up Assholes after we had booked it, and then we were like, we're already working with you.
Like, you know,
yeah.
I wouldn't consider Assholes, you know, like people of queer cinema. So, oh, definitely. I guess they do other stuff, too.
Yeah, oh, yeah, because I just assume, because I always see, like, the movies, like, and not to knock because they have their place, but, like, the Not Another Gay Movie sort of, releases through.
Philly is a big scene for that. Philly is a great, like, gay culture, and a lot of cinema, winds up in the Philadelphia gay culture, and Breaking Glass has been a big proponent of them. But they've also been branching out more recently, doing more horror, trying to, like, get some bigger and more interesting titles. I'm, like, kind of excited that Breaking Glass is sort of going in a new direction. Not that like they're leaving their old direction behind or anything, but that they've been expanding it.
More boring questions for the listener. Do they do physical releases, or is it, are they?
Yeah, they do.
Okay, that's what I was curious. I just didn't know.
Yeah.
Sounds like another avenue of a company I have to reach out to so we can start covering them on our site. But with that in mind,
Natalie, can I do mine?
Yeah, I want to ask you. You can kind of give us the final recommendation. What's that going
to
be?
So my recommendation is actually going to be a film that we are showing at the Unnamed Footage Festival. So it's a found footage horror movie.
That's really cool.
And we're showing mostly, I think we've got 12 features booked. The schedule is like set, but we are like going to announce today, I'm pretty sure. It is primarily new films, like very brand new, like festival stuff. But then we've got a couple older titles in there just because we wanted to screen them. And one of the movies we are showing is a film called Unfriended, which was in theaters, I think, in like 2014. And I think a lot of people... Unfriended is like one of my favorite movies. Unfriended is a found footage horror film all shot on computer screens. So it all takes place over Skype, and it's a group of teenagers, like the cool kids in high school, are doing a Skype call together to like make plans for, you know, going to some concert, and a sixth person joins their call, and they can't get that person out. Because it is a malevolent spirit, but it is the best film about cyberbullying. It is so creative, so technical and inventive. The performances are fantastic, and it's really just you're staring at one computer screen the whole time. So yeah, Unfriended, I wanted to see because Skype Ghost and Teens sounded like the funniest thing in the world. So like I was like all in for it opening weekend. And then I went to the theater and watched it, and I was like, holy shit, this is a real movie. This feels actually like one of the most important millennial horror films. And people aren't talking about it yet.
No, so, people are written it off as a cheesy, mm-hmm. you know, found footage film. And,
yeah.
you know, I watched it with I watched it by myself. I think the rest of the family was out or something. And I was just sitting in my room with the lights off, with it on, and I was scared out of my fucking mind.
Yeah, it's scary.
It is legitimately horrifying.
Yeah, and the way it deals with, like, morals is super interesting mm-hmm, to me. Mm-hmm. Like, you feel like you know these characters from the first minute, but you do not. And it gives you information about them in very, very inventive ways. And, like, they shot the whole thing in, like, one location where everyone was in a different room, and it was all choreographed and done, like, live on Skype. So, like, that's cool as hell. Which is also like something that we're talking about a lot for at the Unnamed Footage Festival is we want to look at both like, is this movie entertaining? Is it cool? How was it made? And how impressive is it like on that scale? So if you haven't seen Unfriended, check it out. It rules. If you want to see it in a theater and you are anywhere near San Francisco or want to travel to San Francisco, we will be showing it on March 24th at the Balboa Theater as part of the Unnamed Footage Festival. But watch Unfriended, write about Unfriended. I feel like it's going to be a big cult movie in a couple years. People are going to come around to it. So that was my recommendation.
Yeah. Wow. Very diverse recommendations, but really awesome stuff. I definitely think people should check all of them out.
Yeah.
And I, the only one I haven't seen being riffed, I mean, I guess I have some homework to catch up on that one. So it works out well. So with that, I kind of want to just give you one last second to plug whatever you want to plug. And share, you know, where people can follow you and find you on the interwebs, and then kind of let Blaine take us out.
Yeah. Okay. So Puff, submissions are open for the Philadelphia Unnamed Film Festival. The festival will be at the Proscenium Theater in the Drake. Again, it's the same location as last year. It's going to be September 6th through 9th. We are accepting submissions till the end of July, I believe. Just Google us. Send us your movies. I want to watch all your movies. I'm so excited. Unnamed Footage Festival is all found footage horror and first-person POV movies. That is in San Francisco at the Balboa Theater, March 24th and 25th. I am Madeline Kessner. I am, I don't know, I'm a weird person. I'm a bizarre eccentric. Come follow me and my adventures on Twitter. At DVD Box Set is my handle. I don't know. I think that's it. I feel like I was kind of serious on this podcast. Normally, I'm a bit more of a jokester. So
yeah, I think the first time you and I talked on my older podcast, and I think I put it on this stream for folks who want to check it out, we were just bullshitting about Puff 2, and we were just goofing around the whole time. And we said we were going to talk for 10 minutes, and then like 45 minutes later, I was like, oh yeah, I got to go back to work.
Yeah, you know, I did the podcast that Garrett, he's one of the
I like the movie writers. Yeah, and he writes for our website too.
I did their podcast and spent the whole time saying, hey, I'm outside right now hiding from George Lucas.
Oh, I remember that. I listened to you and Ken were on that.
Know, so like Ken and I were just like making up fake histories of the film festival, and I kept saying George Lucas is coming, I need to hide, and like and then I talked to you and I'm like, let's talk about women in horror. Like, let's get serious. So.
Well, hey, I'm you know, it shows that we all have different sides. So, and then that was a nice little plug too for our friends over at I Like the Movie. Garrett and his buddy Dan do a really fun podcast over there, so people should check that out too.
They're good dudes.
Sweet. Yeah, definitely. Blaine, why don't you you take us out?
Yeah, no, thank you again to our guest, Madeline. It was so much fun. Glad we got to joke around and get serious with you. You know, like we've said, you know, make sure you're checking out Puff as that rolls around, as well as the Unnamed Footage Festival. But thank you guys all for joining us this week. We're going to be back kind of prolonging our Women in Horror Month even into March, because fuck it, why not? But thank you guys all again. Make sure that you like and subscribe and leave all the good notes and all that shit on iTunes. Love you guys so much. Talk to you next time. Peace. My rapper
reputation is known for bloody objects. The gatekeep prevails. I'm harder as the lyrics on the Holy Grail. Pick up your skull and blow off the feathers. Yo, I'm on a Viking hike for buried treasure. The insane tearing remains out your brain. Stalk the whole range from the darkest plane. It is I, homicidal, we waging. Coming at ya like an invasion of the one body snatchers. I'm in your dreams, your thoughts, yo. Everywhere you walk, when you speak, that's the grave digger talk. Your devil's approach, you get roast. Can't plant seeds on a grave with dead folks. From the darkest level of death, rise up past the shovel and step. Check it, off on the bottomless pit. This is it, Undertaker make beasts and shit that sounds sick. Me, I be the myth you disturb. Call a doctor, see if they got the nerve to try to stop the phase of crucial booming. Sound that's inhuman, scream when I sting that ass like Paul Newman. Somebody knock on wood, knock, knock, knock. All boys in the hood, drop, drop, drop. When I come through with the shovel, no puzzle. Then I'm out for trouble, motherfucking trouble. So like Barney Rubble, back to the gravel pit. Smoke a fast cliff on the graveyard shift. Buffalo's roam. Chop off your head while I'm pumping on a bone. Yo, I got a stack, I'm never slacking in my mackin'. Styles go back to the days of Bob Backlund. Catch him in the suit flex. Oh no, who's next to get wrecked? Pass the shovel and step.
How y'all feel out there?
Unless you John Wayne or somebody can kick death's ass.
Grave digger right, so enforce the night. Froze up froze like tears and bright lights. I maintain my range for somebody gone frame. Niggas are running like Ethan Partain. Grim Reaper's deep is the lock. That's whenever I'm seen rocking teams. Queens drop their jeans. I stomp tools to rain over the drop like monsoons with the lyrical force of the boom. Doom is quick, cause when the god attacks, 90 years later you find the artifacts buried in white. They got my crew ripping up the charts, cause I come ferociously. The one is close to me. I back bitches like a bag of the grocery. Now get binoculars so you can clock the popular hip hop phantom of the opera. That said, I say Figaro, Figaro. The next thing you know, I got a pocket full of dough. Yo, and what did you expect? Chopping mad necks. Pass the shovel and step.